I think you can educate yourself about virtually any industry if you're willing to spend, you know, make it a few days, a week, or maybe 2 weeks of time on reading up about it. All the information resources are out there. This is an unprecedented period. There is no subject that you cannot educate yourself about. You have access to Twitter, where the world's brightest minds in almost any industry share their knowledge and their expertise for free. You know, it doesn't even cost anything.
Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of PayNow by Later, where we go deep into the future of work at Fiverr. Sven Lawrence is the author of UndervaluedShares.com and the CEO of Sania Asset Management. Sven has a knack of writing and finding interesting investments in very unexpected places. These days, he's working from paradise on a little known island called Sark. On this episode, we talk about evolving investing styles to adapt to technological changes, finding trends to invest in, the mode of Fiverr, concerns and risks for Fiverr, starting a new life in Sark, and the unbelievable change and opportunity that this decade presents to all of us. Before we get on with the show, let me give you a brief introduction on Fiverr. Even if you're not an investor, this tool and potential it has to change the dynamics of work as we know it will help you think differently. Fiverr is an Israeli freelance services marketplace for businesses. Currently, Fiverr has a market cap of only $5 billion and has a huge total addressable market. The US gig economy is valued at $5 trillion and has accelerated its growth trajectory in 2020. Fiverr is 100% digital and has many legs to stand on. Fiverr Business, which helps teams to collaborate on Fiverr and hire freelancers, Fiverr Learn, which offers courses to freelancers, and Fiverr Studios, where a team of specialists work on entire projects from A to Z. Gross margins of over 80%, achieved profitability before expected, revenue growth of 82%, expanding base of repeat customers, and a fantastic management team are some of the major bull cases for Fiverr. Although 9-to-5 jobs are common in the current economy, digitally affluent generations such as millennials and Gen Z prefer freedom and flexibility over stability, and therefore more and more are likely to pivot towards the freelance economy and working for themselves. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. So, Sven, welcome to PayNow by Later. It's a pleasure having you here. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to our chat.
So, let's get started. And first of all, how did you get into investing and what inspired you to take that initial step towards investing?
So, I grew up in the 1980s in a German middle-class family, and saving was always a priority in my family. You know, the family had gone through the Second World War and lost everything. And then Germany did very well for a couple of decades, but everyone was still rebuilding their fortunes. And I think my parents taught me to, first of all, work hard, make some money on the side, and then put that away. And back in those days, it was very easy actually to earn a return on your money. You just had to buy German treasury bonds. And those, I remember they yielded 8%, 9%. And my savings as basically a young boy and then as a teenager, they were in these treasury bonds. Inflation was higher than it is now, but still you got a very good return on your money. But then I read in a magazine about stocks and I became fascinated by the subject and wondered, you know, why do these prices go up and down? And then with permission from my parents, I was very lucky in that regard. I bought a first, you know, couple of stocks with very little money. But, you know, I actually made some money. It was luck more than anything else. But that set me off onto a journey of wanting to learn more about it. And I've always been a voracious reader. I was lucky enough to spend half a year in the United States going to high school as a 16-year-old boy. And we had the Wall Street Journal in the library of high school there every day. And I mean, that you know, that was before online. So this was actual print editions, which were hard to get hold of if you didn't live in the United States. So for me, this was an extra special thing. And along the way, I just picked up a lot of knowledge and interest and curiosity and passion for investing. And, you know, here we are.
So it's all about getting just dipping your feet in the water and then experiencing that first couple of wins, and then you're motivated to just keep on doing it, isn't it?
Absolutely. And your generation has the great luck that you have access to anything. I mean, I started out writing letters to companies asking them to send me a hard copy of an annual report. And, you know, most of them send it to you, but not all of them did. And opening a brokerage account was a fairly major affair. And trading commissions were extraordinarily high. And, you know, nowadays, obviously, there's other issues. It's hyper-competitive and everything is immediately available online and it's spread. So it's harder to get an edge and all that. There are always challenges. I think the challenges just differ from generation to generation. But overall, I'd say your generation probably has it easier to get into investing than anyone before you. So, you know, make use of that. Explore, try out stuff. Don't bet the house. don't go into debt, but try out things, because while you're young, you can get away with almost anything. You know, if it goes wrong, you just make up for it somehow. Don't be afraid of it.
Yeah, definitely. I think the great challenge of our generations is patience and delay gratification, because everything's so accessible.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. So as long as you work on it, I think our generations would do good. So yeah, how would you describe your investment philosophy as?
So my website where I blog is called undervaluedshares.com. And I think the name of that website gives away a lot. And I've owned that domain since, I think, the late 90s, probably, or even mid 90s. So my idea and my passion and my philosophy was always to find stocks that are undervalued by some measure, whatever that means. I want to buy things that are too cheap and that subsequently go up in price for one reason or another. That's really the sport that I'm in. And that's what's driving me. And that's what I think makes the most sense.
Yeah,
I did make changes to that over time. And I mean, as you grow older, your perspective changes somewhat because of all the things you've learned, and simply because you literally have a different perspective because of where you're standing in life. It's like probably walking up a mountain, and the higher up you go, the more stuff you can see. And I mean, you just mentioned the challenge of your generation, that everything is about instant gratification and there's no patience anymore. I think probably the number one lesson I have learned, and I would say learned the hard way, is it really does pay off to make long-term bets that you believe in. If you have a high conviction of an investment idea XYZ, it is very, very difficult to stay course over a long period of time, but it is extraordinarily valuable to basically resist the constant urge to chase the next shiny object. And I'll give you an example, you know, I mean, to make this fun and to, you know, tell you a bit about what I've gone through. So I was an early fan of Apple computers. I switched to Apple when no one did this except a few geeks, basically. And it was absolutely evident and obvious to me that Apple was going to succeed on a big scale. And I did have Apple stocks, but of course, you know, even an Apple stock goes down in value for extended periods of time. And, you know, there have been periods when Apple was down 50% all of a sudden. And I can't remember all the details, but I lost interest in the damn thing and sold it. And, you know, if only I had kept these stocks. I also have an ex-girlfriend who was one of the first employees of Google, you know, so I was onto Google early on because I saw it all happening. And I also have a reasonably famous case among my readers where in 2010, I featured in an in-depth report a German software company, which I believe was an absolute no-brainer in terms of having a moat, having a growth market with almost unlimited potential. And I just, you know, I said, this is going to be a multi-bagger. The company was worth, I think, about 50 million euros at the time, 50. And it's now gone up in value over the last 10 years by a factor of 70, so 7,000%. And I mean, I didn't keep them. You know, I had the idea and I was convinced, but I just got distracted. And I know a few people who actually held it pretty much the entire way, which then hurts even more. Yeah. But, you know, the big lesson really is, if you're onto a good idea and you think over the next 5 to 10 years it's going to succeed, even though it seems far away right now, 5 to 10 years pass more quickly than you think. And it's very worthwhile to consider very hard, you know, consider very carefully whether you should stick to something.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I don't know where I've heard this, but I've heard one of the fund managers say that they've the most mistakes they've made is by selling their winners too early. And more than cutting losses, that's where they've made most of the mistakes. But yeah, your explanation puts it out there perfectly. So
yes.
Yeah. As a value investor, how have you evolved over time, especially if you take this year and the last decade, for example? There's a lot of people take, back in the day, we used to take price to book, price to earnings ratio into consideration. But because everything is so digital now, everything is scalable. How does that fit your undervalued criteria?
So there's obviously this never ending debate about value versus growth.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you could talk till the cows come home and never come to a conclusion. I think I personally, for myself, I've come to the conclusion that the whole discussion is essentially a waste of time, because what it does boil down to for any company that you invest into, it's how much cash is this company generating for its shareholders in the future. And really, the only difference between value and growth is usually that in the case of growth companies, the cash generation is further out into the future, but it's still the same mechanism. You ultimately work out how much cash is this company going to send the way of its shareholders, and that's basically the future value, speaking, you know, very, very broadly. And I used to be very much an old economy kind of investor, and I loved companies that owned, for example, real estate that wasn't properly recognized on the balance sheet and which you could sell off and make an extraordinary profit off it, that sort of stuff, you know, very classic Warren Buffett 1960s kind of stuff, which you could find until, you know, probably the early 2000s. That was an easy way, relatively easy way, if ever there is one, to make money. And I have taught myself over the last couple of years to be more open towards tech stocks and new technologies, which for me was a little bit of a leap in the sense that I had to get more comfortable with it. But by now, I'm completely agnostic with regards to what industry I look at. It's all about how much cash is probably going to come out of that company. And with tech stocks and growth companies, it's just that the cash generation is further out into the future. But then quite often you have, you know, it's something that has more leverage. So it might take a while, but it ultimately throws off a lot more. And, you know, the example of Fiverr that you mentioned is a perfect example for that. So that's pretty much how my style has evolved and my outlook on life.
Yeah, that's great. You take all the subjectivity out and keep it 100% at the facts, and you don't care which industry or what the company is doing as long as they're generating cash for their shareholders.
Absolutely. And just as a word of encouragement for your followers, I think you can educate yourself about virtually any industry if you're willing to spend, you know, make it a few days, a week, or maybe 2 weeks of time on reading up about it. All the information resources are out there. This is an unprecedented period. There is no subject that you cannot educate yourself about. You have access to Twitter, where the world's brightest minds in almost any industry share their knowledge and their expertise for free. You know, it doesn't even cost anything.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary. And your only constraint really is time, because it's a lot of information to process, but that's where, you know, a bit of practice comes in handy, because over time you learn quite quickly to distinguish between what do you really need to know about and how can you get your head around an industry quite quickly. But besides that, you know, there's nothing that would stop me from looking into almost any business sector, because you can crack it.
Yeah, definitely. And there's only going to be more industries in the future, so you always have to keep your mind open.
Absolutely. And if you don't, you know, you get stuck in a place that just falls out of fashion. And one of the great challenges for all of us will be to stay mentally very agile and keep learning, which previous generations didn't have to do to that regard. And we have to teach ourselves how to do that. It's a skill. You need to stay healthy to do that. If you are, you know, 65 and obese and suffering from all sorts of ailments that take up half your day to manage, you know, you'll be in a more difficult spot than others who, you know, may be fit enough until their 80s to manage their own affairs, manage their money, which is also a necessity. No one else can do it but you. Yeah, there's lots of factors. I mean, I could go on and on.
So let's get deep into Fiverr. How did you get your attention towards Fiverr? And at the time of your report, it was only, I think, just over 1 billion market cap and $20 per share. So how did you get Fiverr into your radar?
So originally I got Fiverr on my radar because I had some design work to get done, a logo and a few other things. And I think that must have been 2015 or thereabouts, maybe even 13 or 14, so very early on. And I always loved the idea of Fiverr because it gives you this instant access to pretty cheap freelancers. You know, from the perspective of someone who lives in Europe or in the States, you could outsource it to freelancers in Eastern Europe, in India and Asia, people who, or, you know, even within Europe, you could send it to people in Spain whose wages are much lower than someone in London. And I have to say that the first couple of years, it was essentially a source of frustration and hardly any good ever came out of it. So I spent a lot of money and effort on getting stuff designed, which just never came out right and was never put to use. But I kept following it. And over the years, I noticed the website kept changing and it kept improving. And, you know, they didn't go bankrupt. So there was something there that seemed like financiers were considering it's worthwhile having. And funding until it reaches the next stage. And one of my, I'm a big believer in meeting a lot of people from very different backgrounds and very different age groups as well. And, you know, swapping notes and hearing what other people seeing, because we all live in our small bubble, you know, our ability to take in what's going on in the world is limited to 0.001% of what's happening. And we all have filters. We all are very, very limited in our grasp of what's happening in the world. And the best way to deal with that is by speaking to other people and say, hey, you know, what are you looking at? What do you think? What are you thinking about? And I was in New York and one of my blog readers emailed me because he had read on my blog that I'm in New York and he reached out and he said, you know, want to meet up for coffee or lunch or something? And I'm always up for this thing. And we just bounced around ideas and somehow we ended up talking about Fiverr. And that was just before the pandemic hit. And even before the pandemic hit, we said, you know, from our observation, Fiverr could be an idea for which the right time has now finally come. And from there, I traveled back to Europe and the pandemic hit. And then, you know, things just took their course. And I immediately thought, there's going to be lots of unemployed people. They're all going to be sitting at home. Yeah, it's, and I checked the platform again. Fiverr had matured to a degree where the website was extraordinarily useful and the company had just gone public a year earlier but hadn't really appeared on people's radar screen because it's an Israeli company which listed in the States, so you know, it doesn't fit into the conventional boxes. And I wrote about it, and you know, sometimes you just you find the right idea at the right time, and that was a case where it just all worked out very nicely. Stock is up 8 times now or something like
that. Yeah, that was impeccable timing. And also now that I think the market cap is above 5 billion recently, I think it retraced a bit. So is your case still valid for Fiverr when you originally made that case? For me personally, I think, especially in your report, you mentioned that the total addressable market just in the US is 135 billion. And going forward, Fiverr could be at the cusp of the future of work. So is, in that case, is your thesis still valid?
Absolutely. And I featured it not knowing and not anticipating that the price was going to go up quite that quickly. I thought that was going to be a slightly slower ascent. I wrote about it from the perspective of, this is a company that you should probably own throughout the entire 2020s. Buy some stock, put it away. Because as you just alluded to, a tiny fraction of the world's freelancing market is online so far. And there is no other company that has quite the same model as Fiverr. It's surprising, but they have managed to create a moat around themselves, even though, you know, you think it's online and it's, you know, putting people together and why doesn't Facebook and LinkedIn do it? But they do have a moat. And I think the market, one of the reasons why the stock has gone up so dramatically is because the market has started to realize there's no one else out there. And all of a sudden, you know, the old story about when people speak of an overnight success, but the reality is that overnight success took 10 or 20 years to create. It just looks like an overnight success. And what people forget, and what's actually really worth reading up about, is that Fiverr invested 10 years of sweat and blood and a lot of investor money into creating the platform that they now have. And they have focused on nothing but that one idea to create the world's best platform for freelancers, which a few companies have done in very different ways, but they're the only one who've done it quite in the, you know, specific Fiverr way. And I don't see a reason why they shouldn't just keep growing. And, but, you know, just, but as I mentioned earlier, even Apple had, along the way, had phases where the stock just dropped by 50%. And I'm sure Fiverr will also have periods when the stock drops 50%. And, you know, it could go sideways for 2 or 3 years because maybe the market is ahead of itself right now and it all went up too fast. But come the year 2030, you'll probably be very, very, very happy if you've kept some Fiverr stock somewhere hidden away.
Yeah.
And protect. Yeah.
I hope it falls 50%. Because I didn't buy enough. With Fiverr, there's, as you know, as we both know, they have a few legs to stand on. It's just not the platform for sellers and buyers. That's what I initially thought, and I was wrong. So I initially disregarded it as, oh, it's just a platform for sellers and buyers to exchange their skills. But obviously, they are way more than that. They've kept innovating and adding new layers to their already base foundation. So with the arms of Fiverr, the main one and the most important one for me going forward is Fiverr Business, where people can actually collaborate with each other, employ curated quality freelancers. What are your thoughts on Fiverr Business going forward?
So I think we need to just take a step back and speak about for a moment, what is the key advantage of using Fiverr?
Yeah.
And there are other freelancer platforms that have tried to create a model where you could hire a freelancer through the web based on an hourly rate. And Fiverr very specifically does not do that. Instead, they have turned everything into a unit that clients can purchase in a way where they know exactly what they're going to pay for that unit. I mean, to give you an idea, if you hire someone to translate a text through Fiverr, you're not going to pay that person for the number of hours they're going to spend on it, but you're going to pay them based on per 500 words or per 1,000 words. So if you say, I've got 5,000 words, you know exactly in advance what the price is going to be, and it doesn't matter how long that person takes. And that seems like a very simple idea, but that is something that no one has done quite in the same way as Fiverr, and that has created a moat. Because what it leads to is it makes transactions much more easy to compare, and that makes it faster to get a transaction done on Fiverr. It's you know, you don't need to shop around for too long, and the time saving from that and the overall gain in efficiency is just worth a lot to the customers, which is why Fiverr gets away with charging a lot more commissions. They charge 25% on that, which is extraordinary. But the customer is quite happy to pay it because it's such a reliable and transparent way of dealing with each other. And now on the back of that, I think Fiverr has an almost unimaginable number of opportunities to expand. It's really more a question of managing all that and not doing too much too quickly. To give your followers an idea and your listeners, I mean, Fiverr has 300 product categories right now. And nothing would stop them from adding even more. But I think a more obvious way for expanding is to specifically address more different groups of customers. And one of them is, for example, people who don't speak English. So Fiverr has launched a version in Spanish and in German and probably a few other languages by now. And that captures much broader markets all of a sudden. And then there is what you mentioned, Fiverr Business. And I mean, I've used Fiverr I'm an individual, but I'm also a business at the same time. And businesses are latching onto that. And I mean, now there's, you know, the boundary between business and individual is blurring anyway. All of a sudden, everyone is now an entrepreneur of sorts. There's incredible growth potential there. And, you know, digital goods are, it's highly scalable. And so far, maybe 2 or 3% of the world's freelancing market is online. No one really knows for sure because there are no reliable figures, but it's tiny in any case. So they just have to scale it up now. The model works, scale it up, and you know, you're good to go.
The other two best ones are Fiverr Studios, where you have one team of skilled freelancers for your writing, report writing, your video design, which I also think it goes hand in hand with Fiverr Business. And the other main one is Fiverr Learn. For sellers, if they do Fiverr accredited courses, they could have the potential of, you know, being bought out for a high premium by the buyers. So which could entice the sellers to actually go after Fiverr accredited courses, which could also improve their revenue.
Yep. And I mean, what you mentioned is the perfect example for, in a way, a trip down memory lane. I'm old enough to remember when Amazon, for example, added the feature that people could sell their used books to Amazon. That was revolutionary, you know? All of a sudden, you could list your own books on Amazon, sell them, and you'd get money back. And, you know, that seems like such a normal thing nowadays, but that was a real innovation at the time. And Fiverr is now, in some ways, I mean, this is always apples and pears, you know, these comparisons never quite work perfectly. But you could say in many ways, Fiverr is where Amazon was probably in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And the runway they have is just incredibly long. There's so much to be done in the market they're operating in.
Yeah. The biggest selling points for Fiverr would be the incredibly high gross margin. Even Amazon didn't have it. 83% to 84%, and with a huge total addressable market. I mean, you can't ask for more than that for a good business.
It's unbelievable, yeah. And when you look at the number, it does seem to be too good to be true. But you know, what can I say? Right now, it's working very well for them.
And
but never forget that. Yeah, never forget it was 10 years of sweat and blood and investor money going down the drain. So
it seems
so easy now, but it wasn't.
Yeah, it takes 10 years to become an overnight success.
Yeah, at least. Yeah. Usually 20.
Usually 20, yes. And there's another thing. If you've heard about Naval Ravikant, he's mentioned in one of his interviews that this is how he sees the future of work. So he basically wakes up one day at any time he wants, checks his phone, looks for potential jobs that matches his skills and that he's interested in. If he wants, he can do them. No boss, no one to tell him what to do. Mm-hmm. And I mean, depending on his needs as well. And that's how he envisions the future of work for majority of the population. And right now there's only a few doing it. And obviously the pandemic had showed that it's possible for us. So when we talk about this huge mega trend that will go on for the next few decades, do you think Fiverr will benefit the most and they can capture most of the market share going forward?
As of today, I would say yes. I mean, in a way, they're creating this future. They're making it possible. It's certainly one of the most exciting growth stories that I can think of because it's one of the few companies that can truly shape how we live and work and do that on a global scale. And there are not many companies that have that potential. So I'm very enthusiastic about it. I see it just like you. Yes, they do have that opportunity. And Naval Ravikant is someone I love following as well. I think he has one of the best Twitter feeds. I don't have a Twitter account, but I selectively check occasionally some people's Twitter feed because you can do that without having an account. And Naval is definitely on my list. I also have that book where someone has summarized his various writings. You know, great guy to follow. Incredibly valuable.
Definitely. I printed that out too. How to Get Rich Without Getting Lucky. That's the one.
Yep. I think once you've done that, you're halfway there already. So I can't recommend that highly enough.
Yeah, Spot on. Yeah, absolutely spot on. So another way, another thing about Fiverr is one way I generally identify moths is through verbs. And I'm pretty sure you've identified it as well, especially with your Google. So Netflix and chill, Google it, just Uber it. So how likely is it that we're going to see, why don't you just Fiverr it?
I think that's already happening.
Is it?
I'm not kidding. I've been receiving a lot of emails from people, and I have already seen that used as a verb. And, you know, it doesn't work with Upwork because it's a totally different model. And then there's freelancer.com in Australia, which is like too much of a niche company to even mention. So I'd say, you know, count me in for the people who believe that it'll become a verb.
Let's talk a bit more about competition. And you talked about Upwork, freelancer as well. And Upwork is a key competitor. I think they do more B2B than B2C. So Fiverr is doing more B2C.
Correct. So Upwork typically has customers that spend $5,000 on a job or upwards of that. They also have a very different customer acquisition model. So whereas Fiverr gets a lot of organic customers, Upwork actually has sales teams. And Fiverr also creates a lot of content that they sponsor or that they try to make, you know, go around the world in a viral way. But Fiverr will never have a sales team, which is also extraordinary, and which is exactly the way you want it. You want to do content marketing rather than to have people pick up the phone or send emails or, you know, send out silly emails through LinkedIn. And that's why I feel it's very much apples and pears. Yes, they are competitors in ways, but it's also so different that it's not really a direct comparable.
Yeah. And most people I know that they talk about Fiverr versus Upwork, but I actually have a different opinion with regards to their competition, which is LinkedIn. LinkedIn has already, they already have LinkedIn Learning and they have the benefit of the network effect. I mean, literally everyone's on LinkedIn, but only a few percentage of people are on Fiverr. And they actually, if they innovate enough, they can actually leverage that network effect and pretty much give similar offerings as Fiverr has, and that could actually affect Fiverr's potential market share.
LinkedIn definitely has a shot at it. I would question, though, if you think about Fiverr spending the better part of the last 5 years focusing on nothing but improving their product, and, you know, starting in about 2015, Fiverr had access to management members of Wix.com, another very successful company, and they've very much spent the last 5 years improving their product and strategizing how to take this business forward. And despite all the resources they had and all the experienced people from Wix.com and all the experienced people from Fiverr who had already been there for a couple of years, it still took them so long. And I just doubt, and I'm putting this in somewhat general terms, so I'm speaking from a user perspective. I think the website of Fiverr has so much depth to it that I can totally see how this is a piece of work that has been created over years and that no one else would easily be able to recreate overnight, because there's always a certain magic and a certain, you know, there are trade secrets to this. It's not, even though you can look at the entire website, it's not obvious to you how you could copy that and create exactly the same combination. So I struggle to see how LinkedIn, as a division of Microsoft, who've had their own long-term struggles with all sorts of things. And I mean, LinkedIn is still struggling in many ways. I would say LinkedIn should first get all its job ads right. And I love following job ads on LinkedIn because I daydream about interesting jobs that I could do. And I still find that they're lacking in many ways in their core business. So before they have a chance at, you know, cracking the code to competing with Fiverr, I don't think that's very, very likely.
One of the other key risks that I wanted to talk about Fiverr was what you talked about as well, the take rate compression. And the management talks about it as well, not the take rate compression, but they talk about their competition in terms of their in terms of offline. So they don't regard Upwork and other platforms as competitors, but they are more concerned about the offline, which could affect their market share. So say if I'm a seller, what is stopping me from negotiating with the buyer and getting, for example, say 10% more than my usual fee, and not pay five of the extra 25%? Would that be a win-win for both the buyer and seller if they do it offline?
I think the way you should look at it is with regards to what has happened between Amazon and bookshops. Both still exist. You can run a bookshop profitably. Bookshops have changed their model. We also haven't gone all digital with regards to books. People, it's still 50-50 roughly. And I think what we'll just see happen with Fiverr is Fiverr will never get to 100% digital freelancing. If we say right now freelancing is done, let's be generous, let's say 5% and 95% is offline. I don't see anything wrong with, people pursuing different models, whatever works best for you. It's not like everyone has to join the online revolution. Yeah. And I don't see that as a major threat. I would just say the question is, how fast do more people move from offline to online? And let's be clear that Fiverr has now reached break even. They've reached that a year earlier than planned, courtesy of COVID. And once you've reached break even and you have a digital platform, seriously, your margins is, even if it goes down a bit, there's nothing to complain about.
Amazon to Facebook, all of them started as single service. So Facebook was just a social platform for college students and Amazon was just for books. But they've, over the years, because of their incredible management team, they've just expanded their product portfolio in ways people wouldn't have imagined.
And they couldn't have imagined, and yeah. New ideas and new trends arise along the way. I think it's now beyond doubt that the management team of Fiverr is extremely good, which even a year ago people wouldn't have agreed with, which is extraordinary. Which goes to show the value also of research and trend spotting and looking at things that are not widely liked yet.
Yes.
Even in February, if you had mentioned Fiverr to people, most of them would have said, is that the place with the really shitty logos? No, seriously, I'm not joking. And perceptions can change quite quickly. And if you're into investing, you have to find these tipping points and these emerging trends that are just coming to the surface, and then find the right stocks or other financial instruments to bet on them.
Yeah, I think that the logo issue was one of the brilliant case studies. And I think they had a really big problem with scammy logo creators, and they actually created the Fiverr logo maker and automated 90% of the work. And they've actually managed that problem very elegantly.
Absolutely. And I'm one of those people who got scammed by really bad logo creators. And I'm also one of the people now who occasionally, when I think of a new project or something, I go to the Fiverr logo maker and I play with the parameters and I see what logos come out. And it's unbelievable. Machines now create these logos out of nowhere in 5 minutes. 30 seconds, And then you can order it from a freelancer and have it, polished and slightly amended to fit your criteria. It's unbelievable. And the entrepreneurial opportunity that is coming out of that is beyond anything that we've thought possible.
Yeah. And for me personally, any platform that allows people to be creative and save time at the same time are platforms for the future. So take Spotify. Spotify is a good example. It enhances creativity. Then YouTube. And there's so many of those platforms now. And Fiverr is just pretty much, you have everything in that. You have video editing, sound editing, all of that in one place. So yeah, I'm really bullish on Fiverr as well.
Yeah, very good. And so now that we are both bullish about it, it probably really will correct by 50%.
usually the case.
as it always does, inevitably. Our listeners should also take all of these words of optimism with a with a pinch of salt.
Grain of salt, yeah.
Market timing is always a different subject than long-term optimism.
Yeah, because you get news flow every day. And there is a sector rotation, value rotation. So you always have to be on the ball. And now that we've talked about fiber, what are some trends that you would like to see with fiber that people haven't really thought about yet? What new products do you like to see them innovating with?
Well, there's nothing that no one else has looked at yet. I think a trend that your followers and listeners should look at and keep on their radar screen is that of the millennial generation now rising through the ranks and coming into managerial positions and political power. And I believe the 2020s will be a period of significant upheaval, you know, stating the obvious, we're already seeing that. But I think we've only seen I honestly believe we've only seen the beginning of that. And I'm a longstanding believer in the theory of the fourth turning, which you may know is a famous book about each generation has its own persona. And there is a certain cycle that repeats every couple of generations. And we are now at that fourth generation again from the last turning. The last turning was the Second World War and the time after that. And the combination of this very different generation, the millennials grew up with technology and have a very different outlook on life and the future. And at the same time, have an extraordinary set of challenges ranging from no one can afford houses anymore. You can't even afford having a family, and you're inheriting the biggest debt load humanity has ever created in history. Certain challenges with the environment, you know, the list goes on and on. At the same time, they're also inheriting the biggest wealth ever passed on to another generation through inheritance. You know, everything is like a superlative, and all of a sudden they're getting into positions of decision-making power, both in companies and in politics. And I have always been a believer that in the 2020s, we would see something of a reset, for lack of a better word, whatever that may be, whether it's a debt jubilee or inflation, or I don't know, you know, there's so much you could come up with that could lead to dramatic economic, social, and political change. And now all of a sudden, the forum in Davos is talking of the Great Reset, and it's like everyone's talking about that. And I think there'll be huge opportunities coming out of that. And it's probably a subject for a whole different podcast because there's so much to it. But I think the 2020s will be a period of unbelievable change, stating the obvious. It's a, you know, a bit of a generality, but I think beyond the obvious change that we're expecting anyway. And any way you can benefit from the disruption that is caused by that, I think, has the potential to make huge fortunes for yourself in investing and entrepreneurship as well.
Yeah, I think, as you mentioned before, like how the housing affordability is low for this generation, I think the great equalizer for that would be technology. With technology, they can, you know, use their skills, work from anywhere, and literally scale everything and make enough money to actually own property.
Absolutely. And I can, you know, add a few more controversial ideas to that, or maybe just, you know, not even so much controversial, but to do some lateral thinking. I've always believed it's absolutely perverse that countries take pride in how high their property prices are and how high property prices have risen, because it would be a sign of true affluence, societal affluence and success, if housing became cheaper. You know, why should it become more expensive, really? There's technological advance and we're not exactly running out of land. So the idea that housing should become more expensive seems completely the wrong way around to me. And I used to live in London for a long time and I know London very well. And obviously London property prices have gone through the roof and everyone talks about scarcity. The reality is, and there are studies about this, that London has extraordinary amounts of unused or underutilized land, which could be developed but political processes have put it basically not available for development. And then you have extraordinarily complex regulations that most of which are completely outdated about how construction needs to be done. When, you know, we're on the brink of basically being able to do 3D printing of houses. I mean, not quite yet, but we're heading in that direction.
Getting there.
Yeah. So you have outdated laws, a concept and an understanding of property that is completely the wrong way around. And you have a generation that has a strong interest in getting into politics and changing the situation. And, you know, frankly, I think the millennials should work on how can we get down real estate prices by 50 to 80% and completely disrupt the market, make London super affordable, and what opportunities come out of that? And these are questions that investors should ask themselves, and they're not being asked by enough people right now, but it's going to happen.
Yeah, this actually makes sense, because you know how you said more millennials are coming towards managerial positions and more political power. They can actually leverage their already existing technological knowledge. And a classic example of this is how the big five tech companies, when they went to Congress, no one understood them except a young senator. So that's a huge example of what's coming. When more people actually get into that power, they can understand where actually tech is going, and they can, you know, give suitable laws and changes which helps the majority of the people.
Yep. And to just briefly mention a second mega trend that I think your followers should look into or be aware of, it's everything we've just discussed has a lot further to run in what is called basically the developed world, you know, Western Europe, US, and all the usual suspects. And when you look at what until recently was primarily classified as emerging markets, and I mean, nowadays the terminology is all over the place and it's politicized as well, so no one really knows anymore what to call it. But if you go to Africa or India and a bunch of other countries along those lines, the penetration of technology is at such a much earlier stage. I recently wrote an in-depth research report about the mobile phone penetration in Africa, which is, you know, I mean, first of all, you've got over 50 countries there, so there's no generalized way of talking about Africa, because it ranges from South Africa, which is obviously quite a developed economy, to countries that are, you know, just recovering from civil wars even. But generally speaking, it's a bit like traveling back in time by 10 to 15 years. But developments take shape much faster. And in these countries, quite often with much higher profit margins, because these markets are difficult to access. They're very intransparent. You have to be a local entrepreneur to understand them. So if you succeed, all of a sudden, you may be in a market that is smaller or has less purchasing power, but your profit margin is much higher because competition is not that intense. And extraordinary fortunes are going to come out of that. And I can only recommend to look at technology investments and online related investments in, I'd say, across Africa. That's definitely one of the most interesting ones. I'm not an expert on India, but my gut feeling tells me that India has a lot further to run. The numbers are just absolutely staggering, and they are, to put it bluntly, so far behind that there's so much opportunity for catch-up potential. And I would definitely put a lot of emphasis in my research on that for the 2020s, and look at the question of what are going to be the national champions in these countries. I mean, in Poland, you've just seen the IPO of Allegro, which is the Polish version of Amazon. And very few people nowadays remember that Allegro was actually part of a London-listed investment company in the early 2000s. When Allegro was basically more or less a startup, and that investment company went bankrupt and Allegro was sold to some private equity companies. And it's very hard to, you know, come to find figures about all of that. But I've worked out that probably compared to the value of Allegro 20 years ago, when you could buy it on the London market, the value of that has risen by about a factor of 10,000.
Wow.
And that's now a national champion in Poland. It's absolutely insane. And there will be other such opportunities in other less developed countries, because the Poles don't buy on Amazon, they buy on Allegro, and in Russia they buy on, I think it's called Ozon, and you know, the list goes on and on. And we'll see more of those. There'll be a lot more of those.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, as you said, there's less competition and more of a working, especially India. There's, I mean, they have 20% of the world's population. Plus, they have, I think, the highest proportions of people in the working age. And that's all massive tailwinds for emerging markets. And internet just adds a layer on top of that and makes everything scalable. So who knows, maybe they can come up with even better innovations than the Western world.
Yep, absolutely. We will see more and more cases of innovation that you would have expected to come from Silicon Valley all of a sudden emerges elsewhere, which is wonderful and creates opportunities for finding value in unexpected places. I mean, let's go, you know, without going back to Fiverr yet again, but that's coming out of Israel. It's not coming out of the States. Not New York, not Silicon Valley. It's Tel Aviv.
Tel Aviv, yeah. Israel is an amazing hub for innovation. I mean, they've got Fiverr, Wix, as you mentioned, and they've got a few more as well. And again, so when you're really good at spotting trends, especially with Fiverr and the emerging markets, as you said. So what is your process for spotting trends, and what resources do you typically use to spot such mega trends?
So I'd love to give an easy answer to that. Sadly, there is none. The obvious one is always you just have to read a lot. And I believe it helps a lot if you have a system of keeping notes or keeping files about all sorts of subjects. Because if you have an ability to occasionally refer back to what you've already collected, then your brain starts to make connections that wouldn't have been created if you just had read something and then put it away forever. And there are various systems for that. And I recommend everyone develop the system that works best for them personally to keep notes and an archive. And then what happens over time is that some of the folders you keep will just inevitably end up with lots of material in it. And then you can say, okay, subject XYZ now has 50 articles in it, and I'll spend an afternoon reading up about it, because you just develop that sense that all of a sudden something that you had a little bit of an interest a year ago might become more relevant. And then you have a critical mass of material to read up about, to educate yourself. And I think then it's a bit of an organic process of your brain also learns to intuitively lead you to the subjects that you should pay more attention to. Immerse yourself in information, but don't just do it randomly. Do it in a way where you create a little bit of a system and you help your brain to tune in to the areas that, you know, may become more interesting in the future. And it's an acquired skill. There's a really good book that I wanted to mention to your listeners.
Yeah, please do.
It's got a long title, which is why I printed it out just to actually get this one right. It's called Non-Obvious Mega Trends: How to See What Others Miss and Predict the Future. From a guy called Rohit Bhargava, who has been publishing an annual series of books about non-obvious mega trends. I don't think the book sold particularly well. I've never really seen it anywhere except for, you know, one random bookshop in Washington, D.C., where I like to go. You know, speaking of bookshops again, I do like to go to bookshops where I can physically, you know, like touch books and rummage through the shelves and you find stuff. And then I bought a whole bunch of his books, and in his books, he doesn't just give lots of predictions, but he also explains how his process works. And I think there is a lot to be learned from him. He does it in a fashion that is easy to replicate, and he's very good at explaining it. So that's one of my book recommendations, really.
Yeah. And one of the things that I mentioned on my Twitter was, if like there's so many industries that we literally can't, we don't have time to keep track of. So what I suggest to people do is, if you have a particular trend that you're really curious about and that you're really optimistic about going forward, just collect a bit of information on that and just invest in a well-known innovative ETF. For example, like my favorite one is with genomics. I like to go with ArcG because I have absolutely no idea about genomics, but I'm optimistic about it. It's just that I don't have the technical expertise, nor do I want to gain the technical expertise in analyzing genomics. So I just put my money in a well-known, with a well-known ETF with a track record. So that's something people can do as well.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah. And to just add one more reading recommendation, if I may.
Yeah, I think
a free e-letter that your listeners would enjoy is called Exploding Topics. It's a newsletter and an information service that basically tries to identify subjects that are just on the cusp of becoming better known. And they want to be onto it a bit earlier. So, I mean, the title is somewhat misleading because Exploding Topics is probably, they're trying to find topics before they explode. You know, it should be called Emerging Topics That Will Soon Be Exploding Topics, but that's too long a title for a newsletter. They have a subscription-based service, but they also have a free weekly e-letter. And I take, you know, great joy in reading that regularly and seeing what they've got on their radar.
So before we leave, I want to ask you one more thing. That's about your choice of living in Sark. What, how did you get there? And is the opportunity still available for any listeners who are out there who are curious about, you know, working from paradise?
Yes, I get a lot of questions about that right now. And let me briefly explain what Sark is. It's a micro jurisdiction. We are in the very unusual situation of being an island that only has 400 residents or going on 500 now, but we're self-governing and independent. Sark is a small island in the English Channel, relatively close to France. It's nearer to France than to the UK. It belongs to the British Crown and has been self-governing since the year 1565. So despite only having under 500 residents, there is a head of state, there's a parliament, Sark has its own laws, its own tax system, and it's for all intents and purposes a country. It has a United Nations country code, it has an internet domain name, internet domain ending. And it's been getting a lot of attention recently because I started a campaign to bring more people to Sark, because it's, again, in the somewhat unusual situation that its population dropped by about a third over the last 15 years. Bad demographics, bad political decisions, and a couple of unfortunate factors, basically. And it's probably one of the world's best places to live if you're an online entrepreneur, because Sark has a one-page tax return. And in somewhat simplified terms, your tax is based on the size of the property you live in. And it takes about 60 seconds every year to fill out your tax return. You pay your tax. You do not even have to declare your income or your assets. And that is you done with the government for the rest of the year. And besides that, it's a lovely island that tourists like to visit. We have wonderful beaches, scenery. It's a almost crime-free community. There are no cars on Sark, so everyone cycles or walks. We've got horse-drawn carriages as well, but that's mostly for the tourists. Seafood is fresh. You know, there are plenty of advantages, and it is a very unusual place, and I would love to have more bloggers and podcasters and online entrepreneurs living here. And right now, a lot of them are actually coming because of the campaign that I started, which went viral. And there's a lot more information about that on my personal website, which people can easily find.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds really promising as well. And there's the, before we close out, one thing I extracted from one of your blogs is, which really resonates with me, is the more you know, the more you can know. Do you mind elaborating on that and give any final comments you have on what we talked about, trends, and anything in general to the audience?
Well, I mean, all of your entire audience will know of compound interest. And I'm a big believer in basically the compounding effect of knowledge. And as you get older, and you know, if you haven't, you know, drunk too much alcohol and your memory is still functioning reasonably okay, it's so much easier to generate new investment ideas, because you're reading, you know, one sentence in an article which triggers something you read at another occasion, and you might have a folder about that subject. And the value of reading a lot and keeping your brain healthy and remembering as much stuff as possible cannot be overestimated. And as I said, I think knowledge compounds. And at the risk of talking up my own book, but I think my writing and my research has become a lot better since I've turned 40. I'm now 45. And I feel like every year since I've turned 40, my knowledge has all of a sudden gone through the roof, and my understanding of the world and my ability to make connections. And if that continues, you know, for another decade or two, I'm very excited about the future and, you know, about work. And I want to work as long as possible and compounding interest on the knowledge you have accumulated and saved in your life is something I could get very enthusiastic about and keep talking about for hours.
Awesome. That's a really good way to leave the audience with. And yeah, thank you, Sven. Thank you. Thanks a lot for your time today and your thoughts. And we hope to see you again on another topic, hopefully.
It was a pleasure, and you know, keep in touch.
Sven has some insightful content in his blog, and as a subscriber to his newsletter, I highly recommend it. What sets him apart from most others is the amount of depth he goes into his high conviction picks. Here's how you can reach Sven. UndervaluedShares.com, where you can see all his blogging content, weekly dispatches for his free newsletter, exclusive investment reports, where I found his deep dive into Fiverr, which massively helped in my own due diligence before starting a position in Fiverr. Thank you everyone for listening. I hope you enjoyed it and learned something new from this episode. If you did, make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. And if you know anyone who'd benefit from the content we covered today, make sure you share it with them and add some value to their life. Have a blessed day and take care.